Good morning, Jan.
Good morning. Finally got there.
Good morning, everyone.
So are you ready to start?
Yes.
Sorry for the holdup.
Okay. Are we ready to begin?
Okay.
So it is 10:07. We'll call the meeting to order.
Yes.
Okay, we will have a roll call for attendance.
Yes.
Trustee Vickers?
Here.
Trustee Jones?
Here.
Trustee Hanacek?
Here.
Trustee McNicholas?
Here.
Trustee Perry?
Here.
Patty, I assume there are no closed session comments?
There are not.
So we need a motion to move to closed session?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to move to closed session. Topic is public health emergency. And do a roll call, please.
We have Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Jones?
Yes.
Trustee Hanacek?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
I'm sorry, what are we voting on?
We're doing a roll call.
To move to closed session?
Yes.
Aye, okay.
And Trustee Perry?
Yes.
Okay, I will go ahead and leave and I will see you later.
Thank you.
Bye, Kathy.
Also, just FYI, CSD did pass a resolution giving the superintendent emergency powers.
Okay. Four in here.
Okay.
I have a flag.
Good. All right. Then you may lead the pledge, Martha.
Okay.
Bring the flag on Wednesday night or a week from Wednesday as well.
Okay. I will bring it. Okay. Please stand for the pledge. Put your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So we need a motion to approve our agenda.
So moved. Second.
Patty, are there any changes or additions to the agenda? Is Patty gone?
No, I'm here. I'm just sharing my screen.
Okay. No changes or additions?
No.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Trustee Hanacek? Did Amy get kicked out?
Kathy, are you there?
I'm here. Oh. Trustee Hanacek?
Here? Is that what we're voting?
Yes. We're approving the agenda. Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Yes.
And we do not have a report out of closed session, so we move to item 7, board and executive director comments. So are there any board comments? No. So we will move to executive director. Patty?
Hi, thank you. So I would like to make my comments about, to start off, I would like to talk about our staff and what a fantastic job they did over the summer in training not only the CCA teachers in using Canvas online and specific to CTE, different types of lessons that can be done online to meet those competency-based methods of instruction virtually. So we held 4 modules and we trained all the CCA teachers, and we also trained about 30 of the district CTE teachers in these different types of instructional models to be used online and remotely. It was a great success, and our teachers are super excited to use their GoPro cameras and our business partners and offer those virtual field trips, virtual guest speakers, and virtual videos, and all the types of different things that we can do to continue with the CTE models of instruction. So I want to thank our staff, and particularly Jill and Dom, our instructional coaches, and Kim, that have all been so supportive of our teachers in getting them all up online to deliver high quality career technical education. So thank you to all of them. And then I would like to also discuss our focus on guidance. And so as part of our plans to focus on offering guidance and college and career counseling for our juniors and seniors this year, we're developing almost a new department where we're covering a little bit, we've widened our umbrella just a little bit to call it college and career readiness. So I'd like to show a document, and I'm going to stop sharing real quick for the agenda. And I'm going to start sharing this document. And let me change the view here. Oops, let me get rid of all this, but I'm not totally sure how. Let me see if I can just close that and make this a little bigger. So I've been working with both Capistrano and Laguna Beach. This is a document for Capistrano because in my role as executive director for Capistrano, I oversee the various parts and phases of career technical education, including now the college and career counseling program known as Futurology. And I'm supervising the staff of Futurology. So we're expanding from just career technical education to include that guidance component that's so important for careers down the road. So we've built this flyer, which shows our continuum of college and career readiness in Capistrano. We'll be working with Laguna Beach's staff to also develop something for them to use as an advertiser for all the work that they do in college and career guidance and counseling. But the services that we provide start in elementary school with exposure to college and career. And so these are some of the events that we provide. Our staff goes out and does speaking. They do promotions. They talk about career technical education pathways. They talk about college pathways. And our goal really is to align college and career into really one pathway. So we're working with our Futurology staff on ways to integrate college and career guidance and really have students get more exposure, more exploration in careers, so that by the time they are juniors and seniors in high school, they have a plan moving forward for beyond 12th grade. So we start with exposure in grades K through 5. In grades 6 through 8, we really give them that opportunity for exploration. And hopefully you were able to see the middle school video that I sent you links to, because it really was pretty cool to see all the things that our middle schoolers are doing in exploring careers. Pretty fantastic things going on in middle school. But we also, beyond those investigation labs, there are college and career fairs. There's opportunities for guest speakers and panels. We have that innovation showcase every year. We have partnerships with business and industry who are guest speakers and offer field trips. And so we really do provide students an opportunity in middle school to try things out and to see what high school holds for them. So we also arrange for visits to the campuses, the high school campuses, so they can check out all the CTE classes in the middle school grades. In high school, of course, we have so much going on for our high school students. And this year, we're really focusing on those 11th and 12th graders to make sure that they have a plan moving forward, even during COVID, because I know things have changed. So we really want to change the way we offer guidance for our 11th and 12th graders so that they have viable plans for independence moving forward. And then, of course, college, then career employment beyond 12th grade. So we work very closely with our community college partners so that students are leaving high school with college credit already under their belt. In many cases, they're earning certificates and really those value-added skills that they'll need in careers and in college. So we're building a bigger and a wider array of opportunities for our students. So I wanted you to just get a little idea. This is a draft still. We're still honing it before we put it out in the public. But really, we want our parents and our partners to know that these things are happening in Capistrano and Laguna Beach, and that we're providing all these services to our students from kindergarten all the way up to college, K through college, and beyond, K through career, really. Okay, and so as part of this work, I'm working with Susan Holliday to change my title from Executive Director of Career Technical Education to Executive Director of College and Career Readiness. It will add a few things to my title, to my job responsibilities, and that's really the only change. And I'm really thinking of future years. And whoever may be serving in my role down the line, having the added responsibility of the guidance piece, which is really a huge part of all of our grants in preparing students for college and careers, and also potentially bringing bigger partnerships with STEM into our college and career readiness piece. So. We already provide those opportunities for students to get their to meet the college and career indicators in multiple ways. 100% of our classes are UCA through G approved, so they need it in that way. Many of our classes are honors weighted, just like an AP course, so they're meeting it in that way. And then, of course, the pathways that we provide. So just an expansion of our umbrella and our services.
Patty, can I just reiterate, and I think it's hopefully you'll pass on, like we talked about, if there is a change of board, that you're the only one that doesn't get to carry the title superintendent. So I always appreciate when you do. So far, nothing has stood in your way except for making it extra hard for you. But always make sure to keep us posted of, you know, this is challenging, and it does put us at a disadvantage because folks don't get it. So I think that needs to constantly be understood why and how you have to operate like that. I would change it tomorrow if I could, because I think this is a stumbling block that kids don't need. We got to get you guys, you know, going to where you need. So just feel free to always share an update on, wow, they took me 5 phone calls instead of 1 since they didn't know who they were. So thank you.
And you do remember, Amy, that it was that, there was that title before we made the change. And that's, you know, really, I remember that discussion. You couldn't have 2 superintendents in the same district. So it was kind of a sacrifice that was made so that we could continue the program as it is. But, you know, I know what you're saying. That's why that title came about in the first place, because it was the perception. But I would just say, comment, it's interesting to see all this, Patty, because I think of years ago with the struggle to convince people of the value of what was in ROP. And even for students that were going on to college, enabled them to get much higher level jobs as a student while they were going to school, rather than just working in the pizza place. And it was sometimes a real hard sell. And that's what we've had at Laguna with with Anne. I've got the right name, right? Because she goes to PTA meetings and she really lets parents know what the program is about and what the advantages it has. And of course, now with the college credit, it's on a whole nother level. So I think that it's pretty remarkable, but we need to get that understanding out there. Thank you.
You know, I'm certainly ready to go to bat for Patty to have the superintendent job title. I think if nothing else, it's going to hobble us if Patty ever retires in hiring her replacement. It's probably not the time to be fooling around with this. I think there's too much else going on. We've got an election, we've got this disease, you know, all this other stuff. But, you know, I'm with you, Amy. I'm ready to go to the mat on it after things calm down a little bit. I don't want to throw any more oil on the water.
Keep in mind also that you might consider a deputy superintendent as a title.
Yeah, the deputy superintendent is actually, I think, almost more of a problem because the person would be reporting to somebody who was, I think, a lower title than that. But it doesn't matter. And the deputy superintendent, at least in our district, is the person who does the superintendent's job when they're, you know, sick or on vacation. So I think that would be a problem. But I think it's, you know, I never bought the argument that you couldn't have two superintendents. And I would be willing to, like I say, argue that again. So, but again, not the time.
And if I could say anything, it would be that the superintendent title is really the ROP title. And for CCA, you know, it fits. And it's, I think in the future, you will probably need to bring that back at some point. It doesn't cause any harm for any of the other ROPs and their JPA districts, and they all have that same title. I will say that it hasn't changed the work that I do. I still do that work. I still serve in that role. And so it's just a title. But I do agree with you, Gila, that it may affect the hiring ability down the road. So that might be something that you want to consider at some point. But as far as the workload goes, I have to tell you, I really enjoy working for the district and being part of that team. And, you know, it's although I serve in two roles like that, I really just consider it one job. It fits to be able to work that closely with the district. So I don't mind it. The work is really valuable to me, so that part of it is seamless for me. And I feel fortunate because I do believe it has helped CCA move quicker and expand more strategically than other ROPs. Other ROPs are still working with their districts to try and get their courses coded in CalPAD. We're way ahead of that work. So often when Nicole goes to meetings with the K-12 pathway coordinators across the region, she's leading the work because we've done that work. So she can advise them on what steps to take in planning those pathways and coding all the pathways. So it definitely has been a benefit to us to have me serve in two roles like this. And then if I can, I'll move on. As part of my report, I just wanted you to know that we're working on the facilities use agreement with the district on the new facility and the facility use agreement for the former ROP site. We're just getting the details all worked out between the attorneys. And once we have all of that worked out, I'll probably be just advising you on where we're at with those along the way. Hopefully we'll have that done soon. Also, I wanted to give you an update on the CCA campus. It's coming along beautifully. Our teachers are actually moving in, setting up their classrooms. Ann Moore is setting up her office over there. And we're very pleased with the progress of the campus and how it's moving along. Part of our plan is establishing a home base for our futurology counselors, and Anthony Russomano leading that group. And so they are very excited that they're going to have a nice hub there to offer, you know, large meetings, meetings with students, do presentations. We even got a room. John McSustin has given us a room for them to have one-on-one meetings with students. So we're excited about reestablishing our College and Career Center at Capo Valley. We're also working on the one at Dana Hills, and it's beautiful. I think I mentioned to you that we opened the door and it was like going back in time. All of our furniture is still there. Everything is still there. So we're just reestablishing that center. And then Aliso Nagel is our third one that we'll be working on coming up in the coming weeks. And then my final report is to let you know that we're entering into the RFA for the grant applications. Kim has been working on the CTIG application, and Nicole is working on the K-12 Strong Workforce application, along with each of our JPA districts. So we're getting those apps in. Hopefully we'll get news back pretty quickly on how much we were approved for those grants. And that completes my report.
Thank you, Patty. Are there any questions for Patty? Okay, then we can move on to, I guess this is our oral communications. We don't have any public comment.
We do not.
So we move to our consent calendar.
Well, hold on, we didn't do board comments, and I wanted to just mention.
Oh, sorry, I asked for those.
Oh, did we?
Patty, but you can do it now.
We talked, I think, in our last meeting about hiring Anthony. And here he is. Why don't you wave, Anthony, so we see you. Okay. I think that for the Laguna Beach board members, some of what's going on in futurology might have been new to them. And I don't believe that some of the services are available to Laguna Beach students, but the website is. And there's like a boatload of stuff on that website. And I certainly think it would be fine for Laguna Beach to trustees and district to inform their high school students about what's there on the website, because there's a lot of work has been put into that, and there's just a lot of things that could be of use to students.
Okay, I'll pass it on to get it to Dr. Allman so he can get it to the right people on the campus to share it. Thank you. Okay, now we can move. Any other board members? Because I may have said that too quickly before Patty's comments. That you want you have a comment. So on consent calendar, are there any consent calendar items to be removed?
Okay. I think we need to note a correction on the personal assignment order. I mistakenly listed the end of the contracts as 20, the year 2020, and it should be 2021.
Okay, have that noted. There was one that I noticed in on one of the agreements, and I trying to get back to my stuff. If it's in here. It was one where it was that we need to put the word 1,000 into it, and it was 25,000, but in the written description, and I'm not sure, is that on consent or is that an action item?
There is one for 25,000 on the consent number, item number 14.
Okay, that one, if you look at that, on the written part, it just says 25. On the numerical, it says 25,000, and then the next resolution, they match. So this is just an oversight. Did you find it?
It's on page 15, about middle of page.
Okay.
Line 11.
Yes, I kind of messed my stuff up. I can blame it on the cat, but it was my fault. Okay. Yes, it's on page 15, right?
Page 15, line 11.
Yes.
It just needed
25,000 in there.
Oh, I see on the contract.
Right.
Thank you, Jan. Uh-huh. I'll let the county know.
Thank you. So are there any other corrections or any items to pull off? If not, I have a motion to approve consent calendar, which are items 9 through 16.
Move to approve the consent calendar with corrections.
Thank you. So we have a roll call vote, please.
We do. Trustee Hanacek.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Okay, we're starting now our discussion action items versus item 17, reopening of College and Career Training Center for the Adult Program. And Patty presents this.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. I've attached items with this request to reopen our adult program for College and Career, the College and Career Training Center. Our plan is to move forward with a blended model so students can come in for skills days for in-person instruction. They will be continuing with their online remote instruction throughout the semester this year, except for the actual skills days where they will come in to do their hands-on skills in small groups, following all of the distance requirements and safe protocols as required by the Department of Public Health. We are following the guidelines that have been given to the community college system for bringing adults in for career technical education, particularly in these essential workforce training programs. So we're asking for your approval to allow us to begin bringing students back on campus beginning September 22nd on an as-needed basis to complete their skills training throughout the year. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I'll move approval of the reopening of the College and Career Training Center for the Adult Program.
Second. Sorry, I was talking to you guys and I was muted. So thank you, Martha. I'm glad that you emphasized adult, because I just think we need to make sure that that's clear, that it's the adults. And is there any discussion on this item? I would just note that there are a lot of safety precautions in place, which is following the public health guidelines, and that's good. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Trustee Hanacek.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Item 18, report on our unaudited actuals, and Cindy will be presenting this.
Yes. I present to you the unaudited actuals, financial reports for College and Career Advantage for fiscal year 2019-2020. Our assets reflect $1,960,812. Our liabilities are $1,671,974. And the resulting ending fund balance of $288,838 is an increase of $54,518 from the beginning fund balance of $234,320. And this is due to a restoration of our 17-18 deficit that was created when the CTE funds for that year were not received until the following year. We've now restored that. In addition, I wanted to tell you that for our adopted 2020-2021 budget, for 2 years out, for 2022-23, we're showing a deficit. And the reason for that is because when we develop the budget at the time, we don't have the knowledge of how much our CTE funds we will receive, and we can't estimate them. So Patty did explain this to OCDE when asked, and the expectation is that we will receive CTE funds along with K-12 SWP funds. Because they are considered ongoing, so. But I just wanted to point that out. And that's my report on the unaudited actuals.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have a motion on this item, please.
I'll move the item.
Oh, okay. Second.
Is there any discussion or question? Thank you, Cindy. I appreciate the all the work that goes into this, as always, but I think it's interesting that I just think back, my oldest was an economics major, and he said, you know, commented on how school finance and accounting works as opposed to standards of economics. I said, well, he said, that's not right. And I say, well, sorry, that's the way it is. Especially when you're considering how it affects when you don't get funds in a timely manner.
Right.
So it makes it complicated. So I ask for a roll call, please.
Trustee Halachek?
Aye.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
The next item, 19, budget adjustments and transfers after second interim. This is a discussion item from Cindy. Thank you.
Yes. For the school year 1920, after second interim, we had a revenue adjustment of $254,674.31, and this was made for additional CTIG funding for 2019-20. Our grant award notice in the amount of $1,462,002 was received in June, and CCA's share is $1,023,401, of which the $254,674.31 was used for fiscal year 1920 expenses. In addition, a revenue adjustment in the amount of $60,000 were made for the K-12 Strong Workforce Grant. And then there were just miscellaneous small revenue adjustments for $683.94. For expenses, certificated salaries were increased by $29,121.79, and this was due to unanticipated extra duties, substituting. And of this amount, $1,701.19 was an adjustment, and $28,050.60 was a transfer from employee benefits. Classified account salaries increased by $3,575.54, and this was due to a new employee assignment. Books and supplies increased by $36,576.73, primarily attributable to the adult program expenditures toward the end of the fiscal year, and services and other operating expenses increased by $238,067.56. To avoid deficit spending in the budget, some expenses not yet incurred were delayed in the budget until the CTE 1920 GAN was received, and that was the reason for that. Capital outlay was increased, and that was due to the adult program expenditure. at the end of the year. And that's it for my report for transfers and adjustments for budget.
And any questions?
Yes, Cindy, what was what I'm looking at on our the printed agenda, the adjustment for the certificated salaries that you read doesn't match what I have on page 80.
I agree. A lot of what Cindy was sharing is not on this page. So is there some other backup that isn't in here? I just have the one sheet.
Yeah, me
is that
too.
What you have, Martha?
Yeah. And the numbers for classified salaries, books, supplies, services, and capital outlay all match, but what I have for certificated salaries doesn't match. So,
certificated salaries, I had said that they were increased by a total of 29,121, but part of that was an adjustment, and then part of it was a transfer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the two columns together?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But a lot of the data that she gave is not reflected on this one page.
Well, it is.
Okay, I guess I can follow it. That's all.
Yeah, like I had said, the classified salaries increased by $3,575.
Everything from there on matches, but everything you talked about before the certificated isn't on that page.
All right.
Oh, you mean for the revenue?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's all lumped into one number.
Okay, that's the 315,000?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Can I just interject? One of the reasons that we have to make these adjustments to revenue and everything at the end of the year is because we receive our grant funds so late in the year. So we're spending the money before we get it. And so once we get the money, then Cindy has to go in and make these adjustments to cover the money that we've spent. So the rest of the revenue of that grant gets carried over to the next year. So even mm-hmm. though we received $1.4 million, we only used $300,000 of it in that year. These grants have a two-year life, so we're able to use it ahead of time, before we actually receive the funds, and then Cindy makes the entry and carries over the rest. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I understand the whole, we don't get the money in the same time frame when we have to either plan for it or we've already used it. I was worried that what we had physically in our agenda didn't match what Cindy was reporting, but I think I understand it now. Thank you.
Thank you. And I had the same questions, Martha, because I look at it and I try to make sure that everything tallies up.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And this is not an action item. This was just for discussion, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So is there any more discussion on this item? Okay. Then we'll move to 20, which is actuarial study of retiree health liabilities, which is also presented by Cindy.
Yes, we had our actuarial study done by Total Compensation Systems. It was performed, it was completed on August 12th for June 30th, 2020. This year, our retiree health liability is $349,130, and this is an increase of $120,769. The main reason for the increase is really just a change in methodology for calculating their assumptions. They've changed what they call changes in assumptions of how it's calculated. They've changed the rates to be more in line with STIRS and PERS, and also their valuation interest rate is been changed to be what was also changed. So, And that changes in assumptions. It's complicated, but it's just a part of the calculation. One aspect of the calculation that goes into what the calculation for the liability for the year. So there's, and that was the main reason for the change.
We need a motion on this item, please.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion or questions?
I have some questions. So if it wasn't for the change in calculations, basically there would be, you know, just minor differences, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The main change was that change in assumptions, and that was what total compensation is doing now. They've changed their assumptions.
Oh, okay. So it's total compensation's assumptions. It's not requirements, the state's requirements that we make different assumptions.
Correct. I believe so. That's okay. That's what they explained to me, that they changed their assumptions.
So I know that in the past, I don't know, decade or so, after state entities had been under assessing contributions, mm-hmm. Now we've got this huge jump in both employee and employer contributions required. That there's nothing about this change that has to do with that. Is that correct?
The retirement contributions?
Correct.
I don't believe so. No. Well, you know, I couldn't tell you that for sure. I can look into that, though, because they did say that that it is based on STIRS and PERS rates now. So I couldn't tell you that for sure. I'd have to talk to them about it.
Okay. You know, this is just a vote to receive it, acknowledge receipt, and I'm fine with doing that. Mm-hmm. But I think I'd like to, at the next board meeting, hear a little bit about that, because that's the big thing in, you know, public pensions these days is contribution requirement changes.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of concerned that they are claiming that the difference is just their assumptions, because I'm not convinced of it. And I also would like to know if they changed their assumptions just because they wanted to, they thought it was cleaner, they thought it was better accounting practices, whatever, versus are they doing it because the state has some new requirements that made it necessary that they change their assumptions?
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't say that it was because of the state, but
yeah.
Can I jump in?
Yes,
sorry. So keep in mind that this is a study of the health liability. So this is not a study of retirement.
Oh, right.
You're right.
Our retirement plan is still run through STIRS and PERS, and we contribute at the rates that they've determined by the state. So this is an actuarial study of the health liabilities, and it is required by the state, and our auditors also work with total compensation systems to make sure they're abiding by the GASBs. So when our auditor comes in December to talk about our audit to you, they'll also be talking about this actuarial study. So we can ask him questions when they come to that meeting as well.
Okay, so this is sort of just a part of a piece that's going to go into the audit, the big audit later on. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, the auditors audit this information and include it in their audit. So you'll be able to see in that audit section how much we're required by law to contribute to our retirement health liabilities. It's all in that report. Okay. So these people really just do the actuarial of that, but our auditors will provide, they use this information, they work closely with them, and they can also answer questions.
Okay. I'd still like to understand the reason behind them changing their assumptions.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a state requirement. I really do. I don't think that they just change it on the state requirement, but
yeah, it seems unlikely that they would just say, "Oh, la di da, we haven't been doing this quite right," you know. that it would either be something that an accounting board somewhere said, "Oh, you know, this really isn't according to Hoyle," or as you say, the state. So I'd just like to know a little bit more about that. But I'm okay with acknowledging receipt and then hearing more about it, and maybe. Cindy and Patty, when we do the big audit, this we could be reminded of this by the staff, because to be honest with you, we'll forget.
Because if they're aligning it because of STIRS and PERS, and it is for retiree health liabilities, there may be some connection, and that's a good question, Gila.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor. Any more question or discussion? Roll call, please.
Trustee Hanacek? Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Item 21, CTE's role in the future of work. Patty?
Thank you so much. I'm going to share my screen, and I will do this quickly. But I wanted to give you a little presentation of a workshop that I went to that discussed how CTE and the future of work has changed and will be changing due to COVID-19. So I got a lot of really great data that I want to share with you. Boy, it makes it hard because I can't get to my screen, let me see if I can move this down a little bit. There we go. All right, that's better. Okay, so let me just go through this. I wanted to talk about the early impacts of COVID, and within the first 3 months of COVID-19, over 40 million people applied for unemployment. Job losses were reported in all sectors. By July, the unemployment remained at 13%. It is estimated to be sometime between 2029 and 2030 before we recover the number of jobs lost.
Wow.
And they may look different than the ones we've lost. And economists are predicting it will be 2022 before we see single-digit unemployment numbers. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the changes that have taken place. In 23 weeks, more than 58 million Americans have filed for unemployment. Disneyland's massive workforce is still largely furloughed. United Airlines is planning to furlough 16,370 employees once federal aid expires in October. Europe's biggest bank announced plans to cut 35,000 jobs, or 15% of its workforce. NBC Universal started layoffs in August, impacting its broadcast news networks. And theme parks, they're expected to cut 10% of their 35,000-person workforce. AT&T said the wireless carrier will lay off 3,400 and shut down, I can't see that whole thing, more facilities. And MGM Resorts is laying off 18,000 previously furloughed employees. Warner Media started layoffs in August. And basically, I wanted to point this out because I don't think we've seen the worst of what's going to happen to our economy, and we need to be prepared to help our students make it through this. So of those, the economists are estimating that 32 to 42% of the job losses that have resulted from COVID-19 may be permanent. I wanted to talk about how that's going to impact young adults, because of the people who are laid off, nearly 7.7 million young workers under the age of 30 were unemployed, and 3 million dropped out of the labor force as of May. The unemployment rate for teenagers age 16 to 19 hit 31.9% in April, which is the highest it's even been in over 70 years. And so let's take a look at the areas, the sectors that have been hit hard. Okay, and so this is the proportion of job losses, and these are the proportion of jobs in the entire economy. So when we take a look at this, we can see that down here under the leisure and hospitality services were definitely hit the hardest with 37% job losses, and they are 10% of our economy. So this will change the way we look at our training opportunities for students. We're not saying we're gonna totally forgo our hotel and hospitality jobs, because there will be a comeback. But we can see, based on this information, which industries have been hit hardest, which will need employees in the future, and which maybe will have a reduction of the employees that they're hiring in the future. So valuable information. So a lot of the focus going forward is going to be on how we train students and what are the most value to these students as they go out looking for jobs. So 72% of colleges and universities are experiencing declining enrollment. 86% of employers are looking at requiring certificates and skills in lieu of that degree. So I want to make clear, I'm not saying that degrees won't be valuable, because they certainly will, but degrees will likely change in what they represent. More skills training will be included in these degrees and certificate programs. Employers are placing a high value on skills training over educational knowledge. AA degrees and college certificate programs are recognized as value-added programs, particularly in high school. So earning those AA degrees and college certificates and secondary programs gives students that head start in employment. So as an example, we were told to think about an engineering position. Now, an engineer can work in many different fields, such as environmental engineering, industrial engineering, scientific research, medical engineering, and robotics and you know, traditional engineering positions. Not all of them require a degree. Many of them require skills training and certificates. So thinking in those terms of not necessarily guiding all students into getting a bachelor's degree, there are a lot of jobs for those non-bachelor degrees, good jobs, good paying jobs. Now this information is nationwide. We know that in California, these positions usually pay higher than these median earnings. But these positions are going to be out there, good jobs, good pay that we can train students for. And of course, they always have the option to continue and get their college education to go with these jobs and perhaps move up within these jobs. But we want to make sure that as we recover from this crisis, that we don't only guide students to college degrees, that we just open up those opportunities for students to be trained in many, many careers. So in response, ROPs as a whole across the state, we've met, we've talked about what can we do to help students have that increased certification and that proof that they can take to employers to show the training that they're receiving. So we are going to update our certificates to reflect those competencies that students are earning in their classes. Currently, ROP certificates are recognized in the state as an industry certification because our courses are competency-based. And we are working with our districts to include all CTE as being able to receive certificates that that reflect that industry certification for the state. The ROPs were just ahead of the game in getting those approved by the Department of Education many years ago. And so we currently only provide certificates to our ROP students. And for CCA, that means only the students who took an ROP course with CCA get a certificate. That means we're leaving out thousands of students who are taking district CTE classes. They're not getting those certificates. So we've been working in recoding those classes so that they fall under the ROP course codes through the state, and so that those students are able to get the industry certification through CCA as well. So we've started all this work already. There's a huge benefit to including all CTE under CCA. The benefit is that when we get a class UCA through G approved, we don't have to have every school site get it approved. And when we get articulation for a certain class or dual enrollment for a certain class through the ROP, because we have program status in the those organizations, UC, CDE, all of our community colleges, we don't have to get it for every single site that offers the class. So we're able to do it once, get it for all sites, and then we can offer certificates for all of those sites. So we have done that work. We've changed the course code. We're developing those certificates so that students in the CTE class this year will all get a certificate showing the competencies that they've completed in that class, what they're able to do, the skills that they've learned to go out and get a job or go on to college with those skills. All of our classes will be working on those professional portfolios that include those training plans that we've developed that outline every single criteria, every single competency that they've met in that class. And we're focusing the guidance plan that we're giving to students to include those certificate programs. We're going to be developing a certificate for our internship completers, because internships are going to be so valuable to employers, to show that they've already been trained on the job. So we're increasing that opportunity by providing those certificates, and then of course increasing the opportunity for earning college credit while they're in high school. And we will continue to develop those pathways that lead to both the college and career options. As a statewide organization, we are working with CDE for a seal of career technical education. So that's one more thing that is on the horizon to help students show employers what they can do. And that completes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Patty, can we get a copy of that in case I might have received it? But I'd appreciate that email. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was going to ask for the same thing, Amy. Thank you. Are there any questions for Patty or any?
Yes, I'm clarifying. I like the idea of, you know, the whole certification, but I hope we aren't just coming up with certifications just to have them, that they really need to be industry recognized certifications that students need to have to get a particular job, rather than just, you know, because you're in a CCA class, you get a certificate. Well, if that doesn't help me when I'm applying for a specific job, you know.
So the reason that the state recognizes these as industry certifications is because we work with the employers through our advisory meetings and on our regular contact with our teachers to determine the competencies that students are covering in their class, and that they're earning these competencies that are related to industry specifically. So that is how we were originally granted industry certification. Mm-hmm. Not just that they completed the class, but that they've met those competencies required for the job. So it is that added value. It's not just the completion of a course.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other question, comment, discussion? It seems to me, Patty, that you know, it's been for a number of years, there's been a bit of a pulling away from the years that we had where it was like the goal was to get every student to go to college. And the fact that colleges were overly impacted for enrollment, but also that it wasn't necessary to have that academic education for some of the jobs that were becoming what was available employment-wise. And I think it's tied in with some of the programs that now they can complete what they need at an AA level, and offering, I think maybe the nursing area is one of those, but anyway, it's just, it seems that now that it looks like that's going to grow, because the employment is definitely going to change, based even for those out in the industries that they've seen, they don't necessarily need people in the office. They've been having their people work at home, and so they, you know, that they can reduce overhead if they reduce, you know, office space. So there'll be a lot of ramifications that I think we don't know what they are yet, but it's a very interesting time, but it's going to make it tough, I think, for students seeking employment. So anything we can do to help them, that those rates for the unemployment for the younger ones is really, really high.
And I agree with you, and I will tell you that our partnership with the University Lab Partners and UCI that we're moving forward with to start classes with them in medical innovation, they're telling me basically, we don't want students who are already planning to go to college and study biotechnology. We want students who are biotechnology, engineering, robotics, entrepreneurship, because we need to bring all of that together to solve problems and come up with innovative ways in the medical field or innovative things in the utilities. So it's interesting the way that people are looking at careers. They're very cross-industry, and they're very skills-based. So a lot of our partnerships are moving in that direction.
Thank you. Everybody okay to move on? So we have item 22, conflict of interest code biennial review. And Kathy is presenting this.
Yes, this is the organization's biennial review, which is required. One addition has been made to the conflict of interest code, and that's for the position of administrator instructional programs. And that's the position that Kim is currently occupying. Once our board approves this, I will notify the clerk's office. They will take it to their board, and then Kim can go ahead and file her conflict of interest forms.
It's my phone stopped ringing. so we have a motion on this item, please.
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Have a roll call vote, please.
Trustee Hanacek?
Aye.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Item 23, first reading, board policy 4154, 4254, 4354, health and welfare benefits. Patty.
Thank you. Part of our work that we'll be doing this year is updating our board policies, and we felt it was important to start with this board policy. We've discussed this in the past, but basically we're hiring new employees who are working five sections or more, and we feel it's very important to update our policy to reflect the practices of other ROPs, where if a teacher teaches five periods or 25 hours per week, they are considered full-time. By having our policy be different than other ROPs, we have actually lost some applicants, and we've been challenged in hiring people to teach full-time for us, and we have very few full-time employees, so this won't affect very many people, but we think that it's important to be able to draw those high-quality instructors in working for us in the future. So this policy changes the requirement of 30 hours or six sections, which hardly anybody teaches, to five periods or 25 hours per to be considered full-time. And for our classified staff, it changes it from previously 40 hours per week to be 35 hours per week, which is standard with other ROPs.
Can we have a motion for this, please?
I would move approval. Do we have any, I don't know, our the bylaws for this organization. In CUSD, we have to do two readings, but we also have a provision that if everyone is present and it's unanimous, we can waive the second reading. I don't know our bylaws.
I don't either. Patty, do you have that, or Kathy?
We have also approved in the past policies based on first reading. So this is not unique if we do go ahead and approve it after first reading?
Okay. Well, we probably should check the bylaws and make sure that that's okay.
I think Kathy has done that.
Okay. All right. Well, in any event, I moved approval.
There's a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Patty, I think that five classes definitely should qualify as full-time. I wonder how did it come to be that it had to be six classes?
You know, I asked that question too, because when I came to work for this organization, I had come from another ROP that I had been at for 20 years, and all the other ROPs had the requirement of five sections. So I really don't know why this organization hadn't updated that at some point. But I do know that over the past few years, it kind of just took a backseat to what needed to be done. But we do feel it's time to update that.
Makes sense to me.
Is there any other discussion or question? Okay, have a roll call, please.
Trustee Hanacek?
Aye.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Yes.
Item 24, first reading, board policy 4260 and 4360, vacations. Patty.
Thank you. So this is also in line with that last policy that we felt it was important for us to upgrade this policy regarding vacation. And the changes, Kathy, does this one not have identified?
The only thing we had on vacations were administrative regulations. We did not have a board policy. So it's important that it's important that we establish a board policy as our starting ground for the administrative regulations.
That's correct. Thank you, Kathy. I forgot.
Yeah.
I would suggest that since this is a new policy, that we do a first and second on this one. as opposed to the previous where it was just updating.
Yeah. So that's what we determined. We found that we did not have a board policy for vacation. And we determined that we needed one. We looked at the other ROPs, board policies, and this language was developed in line with those other ROPs. And it also doesn't change much from our AR, other than we determined that our classified employees were not able to carry over very much vacation days, so we changed that. And then our management employees, it wasn't clear in our AR as to how many days of vacation they earn. So we went through and updated this based on North Orange County ROP and Coastline ROP, which are in our neighborhood in Orange County, so that we would be reflective of the same type of policy for our staff.
Why, question on, first of all, there, why are there two board policies, 4260 and 4360, and the one that we have written here does not include certificated employees? This just says classified, TOSAs, and management and supervisor.
Our certificated employees, our teachers, do not get vacation time. They're hourly at will. It's, that is a practice, a standard practice for all ROPs.
Okay.
So the 4200, Martha, represents classified staff, and the 4300 represents supervisory and management personnel.
Okay. And where do TOSAs fit in there?
So we felt it was important to have a separate classification for our TOSAs who are working as instructional coaches. And so we included this section on TOSAs, similar to what other organizations do with their instructional coaching staff.
Okay, so we don't really, okay. So the board policy number doesn't necessarily specifically say which policy TOSAs are covered under, because we consider these both the same policy number. I mean, they're two different policy numbers, but they're the same policy. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Yeah, they're kind of combined.
Yeah. Okay.
And the TOSAs are not certificated at all.
They are certificated staff. They are teachers on special assignment, so they are considered certificated staff.
So then when they're a TOSA, they're eligible for vacation, but when they're a certificated staff, they're not.
Correct. If they're a teacher, they are not.
Hmm. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Patty, you mentioned something about accrued vacation, but I don't think that's mentioned here.
You know what? I guess I'm wrong, because it doesn't mention that.
Wait, it does say accrued. I'm sorry. I meant like where you get to save it up. It does mention. I'm sorry. We don't have any restriction on the amount of vacation they could save. They could be a 30-year employee and have saved up 2 years worth of vacation days or something, right?
Well, actually,
there is in the AR, think it designates what the carryover is. So we were going to take a look at that, because right now it currently only allows them to carry over 10 days. Is that correct, Kathy?
Yes, it is. So what we're looking at is the max that a classified employee can earn per year. After so many years of service, they max out at 15 days of vacation. Management maxes out at 22 days of vacation. So in the ARs, we were going to allow, if I think I'm correct, Patty, I think we're going to allow classified staff to carry over 15 days, which is their max, and then certificated management, 22 days, which is their max.
Yeah. And I believe that is still less than what CUSD allows their staff to carry over, because they allow 30 days as a carryover?
Yes, they actually, they're classified and management typically earn a little bit more vacation than what we do. So their carryover is higher.
You know, we had a discussion on the CUSD board recently, and I think I can speak generally about this, but I can't speak specifically. There is an employee who has nearly a year's worth of vacation saved up. And didn't want to come back for COVID. And this person is just taking, you know, all of this as a vacation. So what that says to me is in CUSD, and this is a management, a certificated management person, that CUSD must allow virtually unlimited, although it's possible that this is something that's grandfathered in. I really don't know. I don't have a problem with letting people accrue or keep a lot of vacation, bank their vacation. There may be disadvantages to it. I mean, I suppose it ends up costing you more because eventually it can be more expensive if they get it paid at the end. But in general, I don't have a big problem with it. I said it another time since it's not in this particular BP.
I think it's wise for a small organization like us that probably couldn't afford to pay somebody a year's salary if they had banked up a year's vacation time.
Okay.
So having limits, I think, is wise. But I would like to be able to offer our employees a chance to save more of their vacation time from year to year rather than being forced to take it.
I think it's a good idea. I think that someone who is anticipating, the birth of a child or mm-hmm. something like that may want to save up a bit more. And I think that's not unreasonable.
Maybe you could bring back some comparison what the districts are doing when we bring it back for a second reading.
Sure.
This may not be applicable here, but I know in my son's industry, with COVID, right, so they are forced to stay home, and then at some point they go into their vacation, like they're using up, you know, because they don't only have so much sick leave. Let's say I got really sick from COVID, so I got my 2 weeks. If this doesn't apply to this board policy, we can do it later because I don't want to muddy the waters. But you might have to, in some companies, you have to use your sick leave in order to be, I mean, your vacation to be sick.
Be able to take that time off.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it's possibly that this person I'm thinking of had all those sick days. I can't remember now.
Oh.
But basically it was something that was that the person was able to save a lot and then work, you know, not work essentially this whole year.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So we have only had two people that have let me know that they would have a difficult time returning to work, and we're making arrangements for those two people. So one of them is an after school teacher, so they're able to teach virtually, continue to teach remotely for that class, and the topic of the class allows for that as well. And then the other one will be teaching from home, and we will provide a substitute in the classroom with the students. So luckily for us, I've only had those two teachers. As far as administrative staff, I feel very confident that our staff is able to continue to work remotely if needed and come in when they're needed. So just like we've been doing, we're kind of continuing that practice where people will come in when they need to and work from home when they are able to. And so I haven't had anyone yet need to take a leave. And we do have our leave policies. So at the time, if someone does have to take leave for some reason, they're not able to work remotely, then we're likely going to deal with it on a one-on-one case basis.
Just in reviewing this policy, there is nothing here that says talks about carrying over vacation year to year.
Yeah, I think that's in the reg
it
instead
is.
Of the policy, so that's why it's not in here.
Okay.
And you'll share that with us for the next reading?
We can bring in the reg. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. We're going to bring this back for approval next time, right?
Yes.
We approve the first reading and with bringing it back for the second? Or do we just then move it on from as discussion if we're bringing it back for the second reading?
We're not going to do any action vote on it. We're just going to bring it back for second reading.
Okay. Thank you. So we move then to our agenda item 25, organizational goals 2019-20.
Okay. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick. Page 94. There we go. First, I wanted to point out to you that I don't know that with everything going on with COVID that I was able to provide an updated organizational goals report from the end of the year last year. So I included it in here so that you could see what we completed from last year. I'm not going to go over everything. We did make great progress on our goals. We had some really wonderful accomplishments. And when we were developing this year's goals, we looked at what we did last year and what we thought we should carry over or continue or develop new goals. So I want to go ahead and present. Is it a separate item, Kathy?
Your
last year's goals? And
yes, two separate items.
Oh, okay. So for last year's goals, I think you guys can all just go ahead and read them of what we accomplished last year in our goals. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have before we move on to our current goals.
Just real quick, Patty, I forget. Does Laguna have any student ambassadors?
Yes. So we have ambassadors from every high school site. It was really a lot of fun to watch Nicole get that going last year. They made a lot of progress in developing the student ambassadors, were participating in PTA meetings, and they were going to some of the events that we held to advertise and talk about pathways and everything. And then, of course, COVID hit, and unfortunately, it didn't end the program. They held virtual meetings and they were all excited about the future of continuing this program. So as soon as we're able to bring them back together, we will.
Very good.
Do we have any other questions?
I don't hear any. Patty, you want to move on to item 26, which is organizational goals 2020-2021?
Yes.
We have a draft for it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, so we've taking a look at our goals from last year and then, of course, determining new goals based on our current circumstances. One of the major goals that we had, of course, was to update and revise our online remote instruction using Canvas, and that is continuing. That work is continuing now to develop a strong online high-quality CTE program. And then, of course, developing those hybrid models for when we return in person, which is a challenge on its own. Offering online has been challenging. Offering hybrid is very challenging as to how we will continue to deliver the pace of instruction to get through all of the competencies throughout the year when we have half the class in person and half online. Our teachers are up to the challenge. We've asked them to focus on the necessities and prioritize the competencies so that students are getting the skills they need for those jobs. And we're making sure that prioritization is taking place. We'll work with our business and industry partners in identifying those priorities as we move forward. And then developing our safety plan for in-person instruction, further developing our teacher induction plan, which we started last year and we had our first cohort go through. So we're just expanding it this year. Currently, we have the 6 modules that our brand new teachers are going through. And we worked with Capistrano Unified in developing these modules. So our business partners have been involved. Our district partners have been involved in what our teachers need to know before in their first year of instruction. We're going to be continuing our WASP self-study. We did get a 1-year pushback so that now our WASP visit will be in the spring or fall of 2022. And I think everyone got that automatic 1-year extension because of COVID. They are doing some virtual visits, and some of us have been asked to be on their committees. So it'll be interesting. And then our new challenge this year that we're super excited about is supporting and expanding the Futurology Department of CUSB and reinstating and strengthening our college and career guidance centers at each high school, starting with 3 this year, and then we'll add 4 in the following year. Laguna Beach does an excellent job at counseling, and they continued to employ Ann Bergen, who was our career guidance specialist years ago, and she has been providing those services all along. So although we will provide some staff to assist with that, it's really the other 6 high schools that we're focusing on for reopening those college and career centers. And then, of course, we're focusing our guidance on those juniors and seniors who will really need that help coming out of high school and into a whole new economy. Our resource budget and resource management, we continue to work with Department of Ed, capital advisors, and school services to stabilize our funding through a variety of sources. We have a lot of grants now that are all CTE funding sources that we are looking to just combine, hopefully down the road, and have that ongoing funding directly funding us, so we'll know from year to year how much our funds are. That would be so nice. Imagine that, being able to plan for next year. And then, of course, we're going to develop and maintain our classroom and district-wide inventory system. It's already been developed. We're just updating it. Years ago, we went through our reorganization, and we laid off a lot of the staff who maintained our inventory. So our current staff is working to update it, and we've made great progress on that work, and we're just going to continue it. To get that updated. And though we keep track of our grant funding and how we spend money, we really need to maintain what's in every classroom, and so that we're aware of where every item that we've purchased is, which we think we are, but we need it in writing. And then for community education and engagement and communication, we're just strengthening those partnerships that we've built throughout the region, and our collaboration with those community groups throughout the region, and of course all of our stakeholders. And then updating our CCA board policies that were last updated in 2010. We're going to work throughout this year to start updating those policies. Again, I'm always thinking about the future and the person who may take my role. I would hate to leave them with missing and outdated board policies I'd like to leave them with a strong structure to operate from. And I also wanted just to point out how important it is to maintain our structure. We've made great progress over the past 6 years since we reorganized, and our staff wears many hats, but they've done such a fantastic job in building these community partnerships, business partnerships, a wide range of opportunities for our students. And so I think it's so important to continue that work into the future for our students and for our districts in the region to be involved in the economy and helping recover from this crisis that we're in. And that concludes my report. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have a couple questions, I can defer and wait for somebody else, but
go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Jim. First one, student achievement. I totally appreciate your comments about the developing the hybrid model and really struggling or to serve students best, right? What's the best educational delivery method for content and to get through that content? So we're struggling with that. It's secondary now with the thoughts of this happening. So just to reiterate, can you act autonomously? Do you have to follow, I imagine it's between in-bell schedule and post and after school schedule. Once we pull that trigger for our high schools to go back in person with our hybrid model, do you have to do that trigger for you too? So you have to follow us?
The reason that we have to follow you might be different than your reasons for holding classes in the manner that the plan is to hold them. The reasons we have to follow you is not an hour requirement or necessarily the state requirements, because we're competency based. We have to make sure our students learn those competencies, but they can do it in any amount of time. We provide the hours that we provide because that's been determined as a reasonable amount of time for our students to learn those competencies. But then we have those sharp students who learn the competencies earlier than the hours that we determine in our class schedule. But our main reason that we need to follow your guidance on returning is because students are there. Students will be in the classroom. Our teachers need to be in the classroom during those scheduled times. So that's the main reason. I think all teachers are facing a challenge with this because, again, half of our students will be online and half will be in person. And so when you're trying to teach the CTE skills, there's really a challenge with this because you can only do the in-person hands-on projects. And CTE is so in need of those hands-on projects. So doing them, you have to do them twice. Once with the group in person and once with the group in home when they come back in person. So it is kind of slowing down our delivery system of these competencies because we can only do half at a time. So what we've scheduled out for 18 weeks is technically it would take 36 weeks because we're only doing half at a time. So that's a big challenge for us. That's why it's going to be so important for us to prioritize the competencies that we're going to get in the classroom instruction.
Right. So,
in an ideal world, we'd be able to do something similar to what we're doing with our adults and just bring in students for that hands-on training only. Everything that could be taught virtually could be done with a big group all at once. That would be an ideal world for us.
Yes, that would definitely be an ideal world for everybody. So that would be great. Just a final caveat, then if you're having to follow us, you'll have our students back on. We have a very punitive system we've set up for, if you can't wear your mask, you get busted doing some bad things a couple times because they're high school kids, they'll be bounced back on virtual. So you'll be following that as well, right? So you'll have to.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so obviously I'm very vexed about this specter of this coming up and feel it's not good for student learning. So next, budget and resource management. So if I'm edgy, it's not with you guys. number two. So just to make sure that, again, are you, you know, feeling like you need to follow, let's say, CUSD, when really maybe you could get away with getting the same effort without. So CDE, you work with CDE, Capital Advisors, and School Services. Is School Services is also a lobbyist, right?
So is Capital Advisors.
Right. So, I mean, I'm worried about redundancy. I don't know how much you pay for both. You know, I think at the end, in the future, you know, feel free to look and see if one is really a coherent, great, effective model for you, and why are we doing both? You know, do you really need updates to be paying $15,000 a year or whatever?
We don't pay for Capital Advisors because we belong to KROC.
Okay.
Our state association pays Capital Advisors.
Okay.
We do pay School Services because we belong to the JPA coalition,
okay,
which is only JPA ROPs. So KROP represents those county ROPs and those single district ROPs and JPA ROPs. But the JPA ROPs have specific needs.
Okay.
We're different. We hire our own teachers. We
sure.
manage our own organization where a county doesn't. So we decided to form our own coalition, and we hired School Services as part of our focus for just JPAs.
Good. I just didn't want you to have, like, do, you know, you were paying twice for something.
Yeah.
So, because they're going to be doing the same thing. Thank you so much. Okay, that's it for me. Thank you.
I have a question. For supporting Futurology, and just, I just want to go on record, I still hate the name. I still love what they do, but I don't like the name. Are we planning to do have representation at Sarah High School, at our continuation high school?
Yes. So our plan is, of course, we're going to have the main hub at Capitol Valley, and so we can invite Sarah students over for events at the main hub. And then our focus is to open career centers at every site, and that will include Sarah in our second step. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention the whole idea of having online classes. I think that one of the blessings of COVID, and there are very few, is that we have learned how to do online education, maybe only a little bit, but we have learned. And I would not be opposed to the possibility of continuing the CCA classes after bell schedule online or partly online, a blended program in the future. Once this is behind us, if it's ever behind us, because I tend to think that some high school students seem to be responding well to it. And it, you know, I mean, we're all doing our work from home. Of course, some of us only work from home. And a lot of CTE students are juniors and seniors. They're not as frequently freshmen and sophomores. And I think that many of them have the maturity to do it. And I think that if we had the after bell classes remotely, it might allow more students to take them, because some of our students don't have transportation to other campuses. Mm-hmm. So if there's a class that's offered at Tesoro, and I live in San Clemente, and I don't drive, I may not be able to take that class. So, and give more access to our Laguna Beach students. So I just hope that we can consider that. The other question I had, which is a little bit off the subject here, but I was reminded of it. I know that charter school students can take these classes. Do we get compensated for that? So the charter school, the charter school doesn't pay us anything to for their students to take these classes. So we could potentially then have a high school student taking three or four of our classes, and we would be getting nothing for it, right?
Yes, it's a tradition that we carried forward when our funding changed years ago. So we used to be funded by the state, and that included all the charter schools or private schools. And so we would serve those students after our district students enrolled. So if we had openings in a class, after all our district students were enrolled, we would allow them to take the class. And our funding changed many years ago, but we didn't change the practice. So we do allow charter school and private school students to take the classes if our classes are not full with district students. So it's a small percentage, but we definitely do potentially serve those students for free.
You know, I think we need to look at this. We now have a seat-based charter high school in CUSD, or I don't know whether they have high school students this year, but they will. And I'm concerned that we could have that end up being, you know, somewhat costly to us. I know that there are, in many CTE classes, there are supplies that can be costly. And I just have some concern about it. If it's not something that the state's requiring us to do, then maybe we shouldn't be doing it. And maybe we need to, in the case of private school students, to be actually charging them. I don't know what the mechanism would be with charter students. But I just think that this is something we need to discuss, that it's maybe not the wisest thing. I don't know.
We can bring that back for a discussion item if you'd like at one of our future board meetings and make whatever policy you guys determine that you'd like to have regarding those students.
I'd go with that. I would think that would be great to bring it back. You know, again, this will be our first foray with a high school, a secondary model who, advertises themselves as like a makerspace and all this stuff, so to hook their wagon onto something. And then I would worry that a student with class would get filled then with a charter, you know, capping that off, and maybe another district student would want to come in. You can't kick out the charter students, so I think it would be really worth to establish this now, because we don't know, this could even be more and more of an issue. So great for bringing it up, Gila, thank you.
And Patty, when you bring that back, you'll bring up the information that Gila referenced as far as any state requirements, or, you know, if we have the freedom to do what she's asking. So you'll have that information along with it. And yes. I think, Gila, I think I remember making a comment when we went to the distance learning that it could open up the opportunities for students where the younger students where transportation was an issue. And so maybe we can look at what happens this fall to see if we can discern if that's affected students taking the courses. I don't know that we would know that right now, just because they're so encumbered with adjusting to the new systems in their respective districts. And that's to add something else on. I don't know whether that's happened, but it's a good thing to ask. So if we can get that information from our high school sites.
That's going to definitely be important to look at once we go to a hybrid model. At first, you might see attendance spike up, and then when the reality of the learning structure, which is so punitive and it's challenging, we might see it drop off. So I hope everybody really pays attention to attendance. So if we had to redirect, if possible, for the best interest of student learning, we could do that.
Okay, is there any other comment or questions on the organizational goals?
I just wanted to mention again on this that Patty's earlier presentation about the, you know, recovery and, you know, the where the jobs are and such as that, it's entirely possible that we're going to see ROPs really blow up and get much more funding from the state and much more demand for those classes. And I think that's another reason that we need to relatively quickly look at our policy, whether it's written or just, you know, kind of whatever, on charter and private school students, because we could find that there's just a lot of demand that comes from that as the economy changes.
That was an eternal optimist statement of more money from the state.
Well, you never know.
I know. Well, you're good. It's good to be prepared. So I agree.
Thank you.
Anything else before we move on? Okay, then the next is another action item. Agenda item 27, salary schedule classified management for college and career guidance coordinator. Patty.
Oh, okay. We brought forward to you previously about hiring for the college and career coordinator, guidance coordinator, bringing in that futurology department. And one of the issues that we faced was that we did not have an 11-month salary schedule. So we've had to create a new salary schedule. This salary schedule does not cover his entire salary. If you remember, we signed an MOU with Capistrano Unified, who are picking up 30% of his salary through the K-12 Strong Workforce Grant. But CCA's portion of the salary for this position is attached, and we've made a new salary schedule for that.
Could you remind me which step he is on?
So we didn't have that position, but then the salary schedule is listed. We had to make a whole new salary schedule for him.
So where do we place him?
So we placed him on the management schedule. Let me see if I can find it. Kathy, do you know what page it's on?
It's on page 98, and he's at step A.
Thank you.
There we go.
Thanks. That's it. That was my question.
But I think we can get clarification from Cindy, because I think step A still will have some deductions, because that is a 12-month schedule. So there will be deductions for his time off.
So this is a 12. So Orange County Department of Ed required us to provide a 12-month schedule, even though he's an 11-month employee. So although he's at step A, it will be reduced by the number of days in 1 month. But then we also have CUSD paying the other 30%. So it didn't reduce his salary in bringing him under CCA is what happened.
Okay.
But they did require us to develop this separate salary schedule for him.
Actually, I think he might be at step B. I would have to double check that in the system, but I think he's at step B.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have to correct Cindy in how I described it, that this is the 12-month salary schedule.
Yes, that is correct, because we in the PER system, he would have to be deducted for time, not for the days not worked. That's the way it works.
Okay. Do we need a motion for this item, please?
So moved.
Do we have a second? I'll second it. Do we have any more discussion on this? Can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Trustee Hatt.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This is a budgeted expense. I mean, we've incorporated this into as we've moved towards the college and career guidance, as we've taken that under our umbrella.
Yes.
This is part of that budgeted expense.
Yes. So if you remember, we had a position for a manager that was vacated, a director position that Marie Sharan held. And so we had that budgeted. So what we did was, rather than replace that director position, we created this position, a management position for the college and career guidance coordinator.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion or question before the roll call? Okay, roll call, please, Kathy.
Trustee Hanacek?
Aye.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
We now have a discussion item, 28, enrollment data, fall 2020. And that's from Kim.
Good morning, I'm here.
Good morning, trustees. I present to you the enrollment data for fall of 2020. If you look at the data from the 2019 and 2020 in your board packet, overall our enrollment is down. The reasons for the decrease in enrollment is the graduation requirements for electives were lowered, the current budget cuts, and the current health emergency. The good news is that even though we are faced with the challenges above, our enrollment is strong and our classes are full. This is a testament to the popularity of our classes and our teachers. It shows that students want to take our classes even when they are not required to. This concludes my enrollment report. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I know the answer to some of these, but you know, why with our enrollment, such disparity, like say between course offerings like Shorecliffs and versus like a Vista Del Mar. And then I think San Clemente, I understand we got to bump that up versus the San Juan Hills. You know, why are things not equal type of thing?
Well, for the middle, are you talking about for the middle schools versus the
enrollment? Yeah, I guess it's probably based on course offerings and where they're located or.
Well, I can answer the middle school one.
Okay, thank you.
With the middle schools, when we built the CTE labs, we gave them the opportunity to use it as much as they wanted to. So some schools like Vista Del Mar offer 5 sections,
right,
and some only offer 1. And some of them offer, you know, other classes that are also coded to CTE, like video production and forensics or biotechnology or robotics. Some of them don't. So although we've tried to encourage them to really utilize that lab, it's been up to each site as to how well they use that lab.
Okay, so it really would be, you know, if you wanted to see in your area, like more offerings for your kids, you really need to kind of hammer it with that principal and what he wants to, or he or she. Okay, fantastic. Got it. And then like back to high school, I mean, I know I've constantly wanted to bump up the offerings for San Clemente. I think like our Cisco lab isn't really being used. You know, we kind of.
We're bringing it back this year. We got the Cisco lab. So we have brought that back.
And that way they'll be able to understand probably better and focus what they're getting out of it. It's such a sweet deal. Talk about making bank while you're either right out of high school or in college while you're going to college. It's incredible. So I don't think they ever understood that.
Kim probably has more information about why there's some disparities at each school. So I'll let her tell you.
So actually, Amy, you'll be happy to know that your San Clemente High School is one of the high schools that actually their enrollment's a little bit up from everybody else's. Not a lot, maybe 25 students. But as I was looking at the numbers, some of the things that I found were that we cut the classes, and I included that in the packet for you guys, all of the classes that we had to cut because of the budget issue. And so what ended up happening is we tried to cut classes that least affected students. And so we cut classes that had lower enrollment. We cut classes that maybe we didn't have a teacher to fill yet. And so the easy cuts basically is what we tried to do. And then we went around and basically gave the high school the opportunity, if we still needed to cut, to choose what they wanted to cut. And in addition to that, some of the district CTE classes, they pulled some of their teachers and have used them to teach other things, which has affected our numbers a little bit. For example, at the middle school, if you notice Carl Hanke, they have no CTE this year in their lab, even though they have that great lab. And the middle school teacher actually reached out to me and said, I missed my class, because I said, what happened to your class? And she said, I have to teach science. So that's kind of what happened to our numbers.
So they got that whole extended learning model that we're attempting, kind of definitely that everything, a reaction is a reaction. So it bounced into this CTE world. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Kim, I didn't see, you said there was something in the board packet of classes we had to cut?
Yeah, it should be on page 103.
It's our next board item.
Oh, that's the next item? Oops, sorry. Okay, never mind.
Okay, I'm not covering that one, but it's in there.
Okay, thank you.
In my packet, it ended up behind item 29. I think it's supposed to be in item 30. So you might have been confused by where it was located.
Any other questions, you guys?
Okay, any others? Or, Kim, could I ask you just to,
sure.
You made three statements of areas that affected it, and
mm-hmm.
would you just repeat those, please, for me?
They were the budget cuts that we faced, the 20% budget cuts that were passed down to us, the electives that they changed in elective, they lowered the requirements for this year, which that would mean that students didn't have to take as many electives, and all of our classes are elective classes. And then just the current health emergency where they pulled teachers to teach other things.
Okay, thank you. I was just jotting those down. It is interesting to note, it looks like definitely the after bell was the biggest effect, which would make sense with what the students are needing to adjust to.
Right.
Are there any other questions for Kim? This is just a discussion item for us today, so we can move to item 29, course inventory.
That's also me.
That's also you, okay.
Yes, and I'm just going to present for you some of the new courses for the fall of 2020. You do have all of the new ones in your board packet. So even though we had a reduction in our course offerings overall, in order to meet the demands and the changing trends, we also have added a few classes for the fall. You have before you the list, and just to name a few, we did add a second level aviation honors to our aviation pathway. We also added catering and event planning honors, which is a capstone class in the culinary pathway. We have also combined our CSI and intro to law enforcement into a one-year UC honors course called Administration of Justice. So if you notice that you don't see CSI or law enforcement any longer, it's because we've made them into a one-year class in order to give our students more opportunities to receive honors credit and UC A through G credit. And this concludes my report of new courses.
Oh, Kim, so I'm so sorry, but can you also discuss the next item, which is the classes that were cut?
Here they are. Sure. So that the next, let's see, do you guys have any questions on the new courses? There still are a few still in the packet, if you wanted to look those over. I just pulled out a few of the highlights.
I have a question, but I'll wait till after the cut one.
So, you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next item on the agenda is the classes that we cut. So if you want to look at those are the classes that we cut. Any of them that represent CCA, those are our after bell classes. And so we canceled a total of 27 sections. You guys have any questions on those? They kind of relate to the other item.
I'm confused the fact that we are adding a new course offering Administration of Justice, but that's on the list of classes we canceled.
Oh, we were offering more than one section, that's why.
Okay.
So we had two sections during Bell, and then we had one after Bell. So we cut we had one section during Bell, and then they decided to cut the other section.
And those are both at San Juan Hills?
So, yeah.
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Sorry. Patty's got a lag there. I was waiting for her.
Sorry.
I
wanted to throw in that when we have this list of classes that were cut, there are multiple sections. So we didn't cut a whole program anywhere. We cut classes where we had multiple sections, and so that we could keep the pathway and keep the programs going. And so we tried to make those cuts so they wouldn't have too big of an effect on our pathways. So even though it looks terrible to look at, mostly we were able to only cut a section or two and not the entire program. There are some exceptions. Hotel and hospitality careers, we had to cut the Monarch Beach program because Monarch Beach is not able to provide that right now. It's on pause. And we're pausing virtual enterprise at Capo Valley because the teacher had to be reassigned. But some of those were out of that necessity because of the emergency, and the others were out of the budget cuts and strategically cutting sections and not programs.
I have a question, kind of maybe follow up to Martha a little bit, so that I don't want to misspeak out in the world. So is there any hope in the future, because we have that trademark name as our law academy at San Juan Hills, to truly be aligned with the California, the whole support services, I forget the name of the California group that supports this. Part of it is not only I think it's fantastic, but also as CUSD moves to become a more, well, we've been charged with the task to understand tolerance, to understand improving our students' outlooks in the future and how they are treated and so on and so forth. So as I recall, the whole emphasis with the Law Academy was it created an opportunity for, especially for students of color, to have more of a fast track or a ability to get into that. And of course, you know, at the time I was like, oh my gosh, we're already offering this, you know, trying to help with this conversation. So I'm hoping it just doesn't die in the water, that we can, and I know it's a budget thing and I know all this stuff, but the true intention of it is not, of course, we're not able to do that now.
No, and I do want, I'm glad you brought that up because I do want to explain. At San Juan Hills, although we cut some sections of administration of justice and some sections, we kept the Law Academy and we added classes in criminal psychology and that mock trial component. So we haven't really cut the program. We've just realigned it a little bit. But as far as your answer to whether or not we can align with the state program, it's a California Partnership Academy. And unfortunately, there are no new funds for Partnership Academies. So we can establish our own academy. It would not be a part of the CPA because there's no new funding for California Partnership Academy. But we do follow their guidelines and we are a part of that that 2+2+1 pathway for street law into the into becoming a lawyer. We are a part of that, even though we are not able to bring in that California Partnership Academy funding. Does that make sense?
It helps. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. We are going to build that, of course, over the years, and we're super happy with the new offerings that we're bringing in this year. They're full. Kim, did you want to add anything to that?
No, that concludes my report, unless you guys have any other questions.
We need a motion for this item, please.
For 29?
Yeah, we're approving that. It's an action item to approve the course inventory.
Yes.
Move approval.
Second.
Any further discussion or question? Can we have a roll call, please?
Oh.
Go ahead.
Just a quick question on which classes are now the most popular?
Oh,
are the most students, you know, what are students looking at now that they would, that they are very interested in taking? And
it's really hard. It's hard to tell right now, but especially because all of our After Bell classes are full and we have waiting lists. I can just tell you just by looking at the numbers that fashion has been just jam packed every semester, and it's got the biggest of all waiting lists, if I had to just, you know, throw that out there. But that doesn't mean that's during Bell.
Right.
That's just what I can tell.
That's good to know, though. Thank you.
I think the same questions? With our medical
right.
classes and our engineering. They're very full. They're very high in demand.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other question or discussion? A roll call, please, Kathy.
Trustee Hanacek?
Aye.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
And we now need a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Trustee Hanacek?
Aye, thank you.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Trustee Perry?
Aye. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Patty.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.